Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Game Train podcast. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Callan.
And I'm Carl.
Hello, Carl.
Hello, Callan.
Hello. Wow. Again, we've got a massive episode this week. We've got another double feature. We are reviewing Super Lucky's Tale on the Xbox One and Call of Duty World War II, which has come out on all major platforms bar the Switch. Boo. Yeah. So let's just jump straight into it now with the news. A new World of Warcraft expansion has been announced, Battle for Azeroth, which will come out next year, 2018. This time you'll be able to level to 120. There are allied races, which are like sub-races. There are new continents of Kul Tiras and Zandalar, and some new PvP modes are giving a wave back to the old RTS heyday.
Speaking of Blizzard, Overwatch is getting a new map called Blizzard, as in the company, not the snowstorm. That sounds pretty exciting. Blizzard World, I should say. And a new support hero called Moira.
Great news for the World of Warcraft purists out there. Classic servers have been officially announced by Blizzard.
Horizon Zero Dawn, the Frozen Wilds DLC, is out now for the PS4.
Another Hearthstone expansion is coming. This one is called Kobolds and Catacombs, and there's going to be a new single-player mode called Dungeon Run.
Assassin's Creed Origins received a free add-on called The Trials of the Gods, which is part of a series of one-week battles against different Egyptian gods. The first one that they released is Anubis. These fights are sort of designed for level 40 players. Each one comes with a legendary level 40 weapon as a reward, and beating all the fights ends up with a legendary outfit.
Heroes of the Storm is getting two new heroes, Hanzo from Overwatch and Alexstrasza from Warcraft.
Bandai Namco have officially stated that they are working on not one, but three big titles for the Switch, all due early next year.
StarCraft 2 is going free to play.
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds hits 20 million sales.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That's big. Before we finish the news, just a quick rundown for any of you guys who don't know or have missed previous episodes, but the PlayStation Plus games for this month are as follows. PS4 is Bound, which is also playable on PSVR. Dungeon Punks, cross-buy with Vita. Until Dawn, Rush of Blood. And that one is available from November 7 all the way until January 3, which is a PSVR game as well. And Worms Battlegrounds. For PS3, they have R-Type Dimensions, Ragdoll Kung Fu Fists of Plastic. And for the Vita, they've got Broken Sword 5, The Serpent's Curse, Episodes 1 and 2, and also the Dungeon Punks game I mentioned earlier. Now, with Xbox Games with Gold, if you have a Gold membership, you have these ones for free this month. Trackmania Turbo, all of November. Tales from the Borderlands, and that's every episode from November 16 to December 15. The Turing Test, which just goes until November 15th, so another like 6 days if you're listening on the 9th. So get on that. And for the Xbox 360, Nights into Dreams and Deadfall Adventures.
And that's the news. So on to the games we have been playing, and what we're doing this week is a reverse review of the games from last week. So for those who listened to last week's episode, Carl reviewed Super Mario Odyssey and I reviewed Assassin's Creed Origins, so we're doing a quick little swap on that.
Yeah, I dove a lot more into Assassin's Creed this week because obviously I was smashing Mario a little bit. And I still feel the same way, and I agree with most of pretty much or everything you said. I love it. I was messing around with the camera mode and taking photos as I do, and that was sort of one thing I wasn't really into at the time because it was just a bit confusing with the controls of the different... I know this is such a small, weird thing that half the players won't even care about, but just controlling the different camera movements and functions. But they just got an update last week, which I didn't even know happened. I just went into camera mode and went, well, all of this is different. And it's now super easy to make really, really cool pictures. So you guys have probably seen on our Instagram that I've been milking that a little bit. I'm really loving all the nods to all the other Assassin's Creeds. The sea battles are still present. We won't say how or when that happens, but they're there and there's still control as well as ever and just as fun, actually. And it's just interesting sailing around as it always has been. In fact, controlling the little boats feels really good as well. And I've really been enjoying using the Eagle, Senu, and using it, you know, just to look around like a drone, but also using her to harass people. And it really just adds this whole other part of strategy to, like, if you're doing some of those forts in the stealth mode and stuff. So that's been really cool. The combat feels amazing. One thing I forgot to mention last week that I discovered that I enjoyed is going into the options and changing the controller mapping. That changed everything for me in as far as combat was concerned. You're using face buttons instead of trigger buttons, which makes it a lot easier and a lot more familiar for me anyway. So if you guys are finding it a bit strange using the triggers, check that out. I'm really, really enjoying all the sort of mystery and intrigue, like in the stories and the side quests. And like you walking around the desert and you'll see mirages just walking past, even just randomly. And I really love that. And you're like, wait, is that a person? And then they disappear and you're like, oh my God, not even part of the story. That's really cool. Some of the side quests have been like as interesting as some of the stuff in the main quest, which, you know, I haven't seen since The Witcher 3. And it's just, it's so nice to see an Assassin's Creed game and the events that they're doing. You know, they're really putting a lot into this to give it that full RPG vibe while still keeping it Assassin's Creed, you know, DNA sort of alive in there.
Yep.
All that aside, the world is still so big and still quite overwhelming. I have since discovered the whole map.
What?
Which I said I would do. Yep.
What, even a level 40 zones?
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep, everything. And I wish I hadn't.
Wow.
Because now when you zoom out, there's too many words. The words don't disappear. You know, in some maps when you zoom out, like the words go small and then they vanish and you just see a map or something. This just looks like a big old find a word puzzle or something. Like there's words everywhere. You can't minimize, you know, the stuff that's on there. Like a few of the missions and things disappear as you zoom out, but they're just replaced with words.
Yep.
It's huge. Anyway, massive. But yeah. If I had to give it a score, I think it'd be a 9.6 for me. I'm loving it.
Whoa! Wow, yeah, you're just handing out the high scores like candy now.
Well, I haven't enjoyed myself like I have, you know, this week since the start of the year with Horizon Zero Dawn and Breath of the Wild.
Wow.
Like, and I didn't get to score those.
I can't wait to hear your opinions in our Game of the Year episode about those four games and how they all rank in terms of...
I know. Oh. I can't wait to rank them side by side, because we never got to rate those games.
No, that's right, because that was it when we weren't giving actual numbered scores, so...
Exactly, so this is... It sounds like I'm throwing out big scores, but these are the only two sort of super big scores.
Well, since you were handing out big scores and, like, your big 10 to Mario, I thought I'd talk a little bit about Mario.
Oh, yes, hit us with your Mario vibes.
I disagree with your 10, and I'll say that flat out right now. I don't think it's a 10.
Well, that's why there's two of us.
That's right. Well, we can argue and disagree with things. I think it's an excellent game. I can't give it a 10. I just don't think it's the perfect game.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not smiling the entire time you're playing it?
I'm enjoying myself a lot, but I just feel that some of the levels just feel quite barren at times.
Is it because you can't beat my... skipping score?
I don't care about your skipping score, mate. I did my 30. I've moved on from that. I've done skipping. I don't care about it anymore.
You didn't get the moon, though.
I got the 30 moon.
Oh, the first moon.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going, though.
Yeah. I feel like there's not really much progression in the game. I always enjoy, like, getting new things and progression. Like, you know, once you start the game, he's got all of his moves, the way he jumps and moves around. Okay, sure, you get different little power-ups with your hat throughout the game, but they're little temporary power-ups.
You're, like, fundamentally changing what Mario is. This is all perfectly preordained Mario. Like, it's all about the momentary power-ups, and his moveset has always been fully featured from the very beginning.
That's true. That's true. I just like that. I guess...
Are you searching for negatives so you don't give it a 10?
Shush.
which is fine. Which is, you know what? I searched too.
I guess I'm looking for little negatives in it. Like, I just feel like the game is a bit too easy and quick to progress through as well. Like,
don't you find... See, that was another part of why I gave it a 10, is because of how Mario is obviously Mario, because it's for all ages, and like, if you had kids, they'd play this, and like, a child could kind of, you know, a young player, 7 or 8 year old, could get through this game and kind of get just the right amount of moons he needs to get from level to level, defeat the boss, and call it a day. But then, as a 30-year-old, you know, someone who's into games and loves gaming and wants to do it, I feel like if you go back to those worlds, the challenge ramps up immensely if you want it to, if you're trying to get everything. And like, I found it like, there's that really nice line down the middle where like, okay, kids, it's not going to be stupid hard for you, but adults, it's not going to be a walk in the park because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of moons to collect.
Yeah, it's true. I just don't find it a 10. I reckon I'd give it, if I was to give it a score, I reckon around a 9.3 to a 9.5.
So less than my Assassin's Creed Origins.
Yeah, but you like to hand out high scores like candy. We just went through this.
Do I, though?
But I rated it higher than my Assassin's Creed Origins experience. I gave Assassin's Creed a 9, remember?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's definitely a contender for Game of the Year. Whether it's my Game of the Year, you'll find out in the Game of the Year episode.
Well, it doesn't sound like it.
Hey, I said it's a contender. Every game's a contender.
I suppose.
No, but it's a damn strong candidate for it. Now, if Mario and Zelda release side by side, I don't know which would actually be the better game.
They're so different.
They're so different, but they're both excellent at the same time.
Yeah, they are. They're both such excellent examples of the style of game they themselves represent. Mario is a presentation of, what do you call, like, feature by feature, instance by instance, like, yeah. world, and it's just showing all these different instances and doing it beautifully. They're not, like, open world craziness, but they're not tiny levels. They're just, like, these big blocks of playgrounds, and then Breath of the Wild is just one huge survival, how you use the physics and live in this giant alive world.
I was just thinking of something then. I guess I went to the last boss in the game, like, through the standard game of Mario Odyssey. I've heard there's a bit of endgame content, so I may reassess my score when I get to that point.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I sort of stand it at that sort of 9.3 to 9.5 level around there.
Just know that the story mode is roughly a third, if not less, of the content.
Right, so coming up to our shout out of the week. So this one goes to a place called Born and Thread, which is a site run by a friend of yours, Dan Simmons.
Yeah.
And so the website is bornandthread.com. And what Dan does, he is a printing company, really. And he makes shirts, stickers, hats, business cards, bottle openers, etc. So if you've got, like, you know, stuff with your logos or whatever on, you want to get it all made up, go check out bornandthread.com. He can do all that stuff for you at a very, very high quality.
Yeah. So the thing about Dan is, this is not just another print company. This is like, and we mentioned him because we've done a lot of work together. Dan from Born and Thread has helped me out in my own band and my music stuff for a long time. And he's helped out a lot of other friends of mine, and he's done nothing but incredible work. He also does custom work and design, which is just, you just have to go on the website and even just follow his Instagram, which is just Born and Thread, and check it out yourself. But his own work and his own designs are so good that you don't even know that this guy's making them. Like, we saw him turn up to PAX on two different days with two different shirts we assumed he bought online or something. Yeah. And then he's like, oh yeah, these are mine. We're like, wait, what, you made those? He's like, yeah, I just threw something together this morning, chucked it in the printer. Ta-da, here it is. And it's like, dude, that's like a world-class shirt. I would order that. And he's like, well, you can. just call me. It's like, oh my God, it's so weird that you can just do that. So if you guys out there have any kind of patterns that you want, or you don't, and you just have an idea, you can call him with that as well, and he can help you out.
Yep.
It's really amazing stuff. Check it out. Born in Thread.
All right, so now on to our first feature review this week, and it is Super Lucky's Tale.
All right, Super Lucky's Tale. Yes, so that's out now. It dropped on the 7th of November at the same time as the Xbox One X. So it's one of the launch titles. It's out on the Xbox and on Windows on the computer. It's developed by Playful Corp and published by Microsoft Studios. So I guess the general gist of this game is it's a 3D platformer. It's a VR game turned Xbox One exclusive for console. You're a small fox running around in like a world that a big old book sucked you into. You're exploring worlds and collecting mostly coins, all kinds of different things that all actually are just coins. It's very fun. It's very colorful, very simple story. It's not really about the story. It's just that, you know, there's 2D sections, there's 3D sections. So that's kind of the gist of the game. Now, the first thing you notice about this game is it's super charming, very bright sort of storybook visuals. Really, the worlds are like big, thick kind of buildings, kind of like World of Warcraft-y big designs, you know, those kind of larger than life, which is really fun. It's very almost plasticky in its polish, like really clean. I'm pretty sure this game is mostly for the younger audience because it's very easy. In theory, it's very easy, which is nice for Xbox owners, or like, you know, families out there have kids and only have an Xbox. I don't know why you wouldn't have a Switch, but just saying, if there's no Switch in the house, this is a great sort of thing for the kids, because Xbox, I just feel like there's not a really big library of this kind of thing for the younger audience. The puzzles do feel quite fun. If traversal was a little tighter, and that's what kind of brings me into some of the sort of downsides of this game, is immediately you can feel that it's a port from a VR game, because as soon as you get in, especially after playing Mario, which, you know, you try and not think of while reviewing something like this, but I have to. And that's like, the camera isn't, when you try and move the camera, it doesn't kind of just smoothly go around you. It skips in different steps, which is something that's very akin to VR games, because it makes you feel less sick when you're doing it. So most of the games you play in VR, especially if they're third person, you'll find that the camera does just kind of skip in places just to try and, you know, alleviate that sickening feeling when you're inside a game, like in VR, whereas in this case you're not anymore. So I thought maybe they'd change that, you know, for the switch over to a normal console game. But also, if you actually want to look around, the camera only goes a certain sort of semicircle around your character. If you actually want to look around or look up or behind you, you actually have to hold down a button to go into first person mode. Or not really first person, but sort of under the shoulder mode, and then you can look around, but you can't move. And then you release that button and you can continue walking. So that's really jarring. And also another thing I noticed, it in every single door or tunnel or level you go into, or just starting up, the loading times are massive.
See, you were talking to me about this today, because I've started playing the game as well. I didn't find the loading times that bad.
Really? So firstly, when I first turn on the game, it's like 2 to 3 minutes of just this one screen. That aside, once I get into the game, there are these like little tunnels. You go into a tunnel, you do like a 30-second thing, and then you come out of the tunnel. Now, when I jump into that tunnel, it takes about 10, 20, sometimes 30 seconds just to load this little tunnel. And I'd jump on a few things, collect the clover, and jump on an exit, and then another 20, 30 seconds to get out of it. And that's just like going in and out of a door.
Oh, and but if clover's actually, the other collectible you get other than the coins, yeah?
Of course, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned. So the coins is like this main big number that counts up slowly, and then clover is like the moons in Mario
you collect. I was waiting for that.
That is the main collectible. But yeah, every time I went into a door or started a new level, I was like, oh, here we go. And it really just breaks up, especially after playing Assassin's Creed, where you can traverse this entire world without a second of loading. And even if you fast travel, it's quite fast. And that's a big game. That's a game where it's okay to have a bit of a loading time, but it doesn't, which I just find so weird in a game like this. It's like the loading times really jarred my gaming experience, which I haven't felt in a long time. Sometimes there's like a big loading time, you know, like at the start of GTA or something, it loads for like, you know, nearly 5 minutes, but then never again. So yeah, the coins were a bit weird because there's like all kinds of exciting collectibles, it seems like, you know, like they'll unlock parts of this main hub. Every time you finish a level, a bit of the main hub gets unlocked and you can do a few more things, collect a few more coins, which keep disappearing, reappearing. So I don't know what exactly it's for. Like, it's not really something you're collecting. It's just kind of money that builds up. But there's all these, like, there's big diamonds and little diamonds and coins and giant coins and little coins. But every single thing you collect just goes into your coin count. Did you see that?
Yes.
I was like, ooh, a secret crystal. I'm going to jump up to the top of this building and collect this secret crystal. It's a bit hard, but it's going to be worth it. And I got it. And then it's like, cool, 10 coins. I'm like, really? But then if you go in a pipe and come back up, all the coins reappear again anyway.
Mm.
So the stakes are really light. Now I look at a diamond and go like, eh, I'm not going to get that one because it's just a bunch of coins. So I found that a bit weird. I didn't quite. It feels like they were putting things in for the sake of it when really they didn't want to just admit that it's just a level full of coins.
Yep.
That's not a serious thing. For kids, they don't really mind. They just want to get the thing. I found it weird that it keeps reappearing, so there's no point in doing the hard thing to get it. Because either it's for nothing or you feel ripped off when it reappears and you're like, dude, I did all that work to get that thing. The controls were really floaty. It felt like I was on the moon.
Yep.
Do you feel like you jump a bit slowly and you land a bit? So I don't know. It's hard to explain unless you actually play it.
Okay.
Just like floaty. I feel light, like I'm a balloon jumping. So that's a bit weird, but that's about it. Besides that, there's not much else bad to say about it. It's just very simple. I think it really is aimed at a younger audience.
I do like the tunneling mechanic that you do, though. That's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. You can hold the trigger and you go underground. And that gets you, like, underneath cages and little things like that. And I have to say that the side-scrolling levels are what wins this for me because they are probably the most fun I had.
Yep.
There's a few little slidey puzzles. There's all kinds of things. So it is fun if you're younger, and they're just kind of like different fun mini games within this big proper game. But it feels like there's just absolutely no stakes. The characters are also they're charmingly designed, but just so unlovable. Like, they feel very bland.
So what do you give this game then?
It's a really weird one because it looks pretty, but because of the controls and that weird camera, it's just and the loading times, I found it like quite unplayable, and I wasn't enjoying myself, mm-hmm. even though I could see how I could have been. So I'd have to give this about a 5.5 out of 10. It just passes that middle. Maybe if I was younger, different, and if I had kids, I think it's a great one. But yeah, it's about a 5.5 for me.
All right, and that was Super Lucky's Tale. So the other feature game this week is Call of Duty World War II.
Let's move!
You think you got some guts, don't you?
This isn't us.
Well, look, it's all or nothing. It's all been leading to this. Let's move.
Call of Duty World War II is 2017's Call of Duty game. We seem to get one of these every year. This one's set back in World War II. It is developed by Sledgehammer Games and published by Activision. So the last few years we've seen the Call of Duty games go sort of more into futuristic events with Advanced Warfare and Infinite Warfare. They've pulled it back into World War II, which I think is a great move for the series. After Battlefield 1 went back to World War I, it's kind of cool to bring everything back. All the tech goes back lower again. And yeah, you know, I guess you do sort of scenarios that really did kind of happen.
Yeah, and there's a bit of fatigue in the modern stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I think everyone's over jump packs and things like that. The campaign in this game is quite good. I've been playing a lot of that. So you go through pretty much Europe in World War II. Kicks off with the storming of the beaches at Normandy, which is really cool opening to the game.
Oh, that's how the game opens.
Yes, and you go through, yeah, other parts of Europe, and you go through, like, you know, occupied France, and et cetera from there. So I don't want to give too much away, but it's what you expect from a World War II game, really. There's some very, very cool set pieces in it, especially nice. One with a train later on, which I don't want to talk too much about. That's a very, it was very almost Uncharted-esque. In a way, it all sort of unfolded. It was actually very, very cool.
Okay, but in first person. But in
first person, yeah. There's a lot going on. There's some.
Wow.
Yeah, there's. It's a war story. So, you know, you're out there with your squad and going through World War II, the ups and downs of war.
Did you enjoy this? I mean, you know, we got to compare it. Did you enjoy this one or Battlefield 1's sort of one player more?
Didn't really play just Battlefield 1's one player. Yeah, yeah. So I'm really enjoying this now. I did Infinite Warfare actually at the start of this year, which I really enjoyed as well. So I'm probably enjoyed the campaigns about the same on both.
Okay, okay.
I did also some of the multiplayer, which I'm terrible at.
Oh, I would have loved to see
that. Oh, you would have laughed. You would have laughed and laughed. You know I suck at first-person shooters on console. So I'm playing this on the PlayStation 4, by the way, so people know. I'm not very good at first-person shooters on console. I'm the first to admit that. I'm rubbish at them. Because I grew up playing first-person shooters on PC. So,
of course.
So I still feel weird playing a first-person shooter on a console with a control. It still feels foreign to me. So I'm not very good at the online because, of course, Call of Duty Online is full of freaks that just annihilate you over and over again. You know, watching the kill cam and I'm like, how did he even see me there? And he pops up the sniper rifle. Like, yeah, actually, this one map I was doing was like an attack and defense on the beach of Normandy, right? So I'm doing the defending there. It's like, all right, so everyone's coming out of the boats. I'm like, oh, this should be easy. But no, someone's got a sniper rifle down there in the water picking us all off in the bunkers up the top. We're supposed to have the advantage here. But this guy was so good with his sniper rifle. Yeah, it was... wow. Yeah. So there's all your traditional modes. So there's like team deathmatch, free-for-all, capture the flag, attack and defend points, and all those sorts of things. So what you normally expect to find in a online multiplayer first-person shooter game.
Yep, okay.
There are a couple of different classes you can play that have, like, different little perks. Infantry or you're an part of the Air Force unit or et cetera, et cetera. I guess your weapons and stuff are a little different as well, but you just get little different perks and things. And then you level up, you gain ranks, and you unlock more weapons and upgrades and all things like that. And another mode which has become quite prominent in the Call of Duty games is the zombie mode. So once again, they've brought that back. This time you're killing Nazi zombies, which is just like a survival mode that you do with like four people in a team. And it's just endless wave of zombies, but it's quite fun. You sort of get points every time you kill a zombie. You use those points to buy new weapons or upgrades like your health or speed, etc. And you just got to really survive as long as you can.
So it's like a horde mode, basically, aren't
it? It pretty much is, but it's actually a lot of fun. I was doing it with randoms, and I was still having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
So I think I did up to, like, 12 waves or something. I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it's co-op.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's co-op. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah. Look, the game looks beautiful. It sounds great. You know, the weapons all feel like they've got presence about them. Nice. Which sometimes in first-person shooters, that can be a little lacking with the guns.
Yeah,
and
true.
Yeah, the graphics just, it looks outstanding. It runs super smooth. It's a really solid first-person shooter package. And if you're into Call of Duty and you're into World War II and like scenarios, etc., go get it. Like, it's a really solid game. It's like a nice return to form for Call of Duty. Like, I'll give this a 9.
A 9 for a Call of Duty. Okay.
I'm interested to see what you'll give it when you eventually play it one day. Well, your thoughts on it. But for me, I thought it was quite solid. There weren't too many knocks that I found with it.
Okay.
Sometimes, I guess this is my own thing, I have a real issue picking out soldiers in the game and they all blend in. I end up shooting my own squad mates, etc. But that's just a me thing, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. You do that to us.
And also, I don't think my TV is big enough. But yeah, that's amazing. Yes, but you know, it's a really solid package.
Wow. Okay, that's really interesting. Here's you talking about me throwing around big numbers and
It's not like I gave it a 10.
I gave mine a 5.5, buddy.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it should have been given a 5.5. I would have actually given that a little higher.
See, you're just all over the place.
How am I all over the place?
You get up me for giving one of the best games released a 10, and you give a COD a 9. Well, this is nice controversial.
It looks great. It sounds great. It feels great.
Sounds like Mario.
The single player campaign is solid. There's enough hours in it to keep you going.
Oh yeah.
Of course, I reckon about 8 hours, which is what you expect from a first-person shooter.
Yeah, that's a good time. It's a great amount.
It's, you know, the multiplayer is always solid in COD games.
Yeah, that's true.
Plus, the zombie mode's heaps of fun. So I'm like, well, it's probably around a 9.
Sounds like a 9 to me, man.
Yeah, it does. So I'm sticking by my 9. All right, and that is Call of Duty World War II. Right, guys, now it's time for Backtrack, where we have a look back at this week in gaming history.
What we're going to do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
All right. This week's Backtrack happened on the 15th of November, 2001. And it was Microsoft launches the Xbox in North America, which is Microsoft's first foray into the video game console market. And they have since sold over 40 million units worldwide.
Huh. Of what? Of Xboxes in general? So is that counting like Xbox 360 and Xbox One?
You know, I'd love to tell you, but it is quite unclear here on my information. Yep.
Cool.
So we'll leave out the sales. But yeah, so Xbox came out this week right here. So and that was, I remember when I first heard about that, the Xbox, you know, like the direct Xbox, and Microsoft is making its own console. It's gonna be like a computer, but you join it onto a TV and play games just like on your PS2. And I was like, well, just like on your PlayStation, because PS2 hadn't even, that was the like the direct competition for PS2.
Yep.
And I just remember, I was so excited. I saw that. Remember there was that promo and there was that girl dancing next to a giant mech robot or something? I remember.
I don't know.
Oh, man. I remember seeing that going like, whoa, the future of games, of course. It's this thing that's connected to computers and, you know, Microsoft and Bill Gates or something. I don't know. I was too young to know what was going on. All I knew is that computer people were making consoles, and I was like, they won't stand a chance. But you know, it's exciting. It was such a confusing and strange time, and like, it felt like Nintendo were on their way out, but they really weren't. Well, was that GameCube?
Yeah, GameCube was around that time.
Yeah, and I remember, see, I didn't get a GameCube, so that was the one Nintendo console that I missed. My little brother's got one, so there was one in the house, But it was upstairs, and I didn't go upstairs. I lived in the garage. All my consoles were downstairs. I was too cool, which was stupid.
Yeah, I remember playing games with you in your garage.
Yeah. And, well, then you wouldn't have remembered any GameCubes. I did bring it down there, I think, to try Wind Waker. Pretty sure I had to borrow my brother's.
I played through Wind Waker on the GameCube.
It must have been on that. I wonder, my friend, Degs... He played Wind Waker. I wonder if he did on a GameCube, because I don't remember him ever getting one. That was just the weirdest little gap for us was the GameCube. We just skipped gaming then. That's when we all started skateboarding and making videos for a few years.
Do you think Nintendo and their little mini discs as well threw a lot of people off there? Well, we've gone way off tangent here, but anyway, let's continue with this. This is fun.
It's fine. It's fine. I think so. I remember this really cool thing that I really latched onto, which was just some PR jargon, and it was just but you know what? Having said, I take that back, because it wasn't PR jargon. They have stuck with it since the day they said it, and that was when they released the GameCube. I don't remember who said it, but someone in Nintendo, because they said, how come you have these mini discs? Everyone's going disc mode. You're finally going with discs, but you're going this weird shape. And they said, our machines are for games, and that's all they're for.
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
Yeah.
And people assume, because back then PlayStation 2 was coming out.
Yeah, and they had the DVD.
And that had a DVD player in there.
And so did Xbox.
And so did Xbox. And people went, well, Nintendo have shot themselves in the foot here.
Yeah.
Everyone else has got these things where you can just have one machine hooked up to your TV.
Yeah. And I remember even then being a cynical little shit and going you're just saying that because you didn't do it this time, but next time, or the time after that, you'll figure out how to do it and then you'll jump on board. But now that I rethink it, they really stuck to their guns. And from then all the way to now, their machines have only been for games.
That's so true.
You can't play DVDs on the Wii, as far as I'm aware. Or the Wii U.
No.
And then...
That's weird.
And for even though it's a normal size disc, but remember when you feel those Wii U discs, they're soft and round on the edges?
I never held a Wii U disc.
Ah, well, they're very strange. They're the exact same size as a DVD, but they're like when you put your finger in the middle, to put the disc in, you can never cut your fingers because it's all rounded and really soft and... I don't know, but... Oh. And now they're the Switch and they're back to cartridges and it's like... They never backed, PlayStation and Xbox. They always say stuff and then they back out on it and turn it around.
Oh, don't those both companies exactly known for backflipping? There's backflips from both sides.
And I have to say that I'm very impressed by Nintendo. I've never thought about it until this very second right now that they are one of the only people that has said something so long ago. I remember reading that and thinking, wow, you guys are really cool. And what has it been, 20 years later? They've stuck to their guns 100%, and they've doubled down on it.
Well, there you go. All right, so that's our backtrack this week, which was Xbox, but went into Nintendo's reliance on always being a gaming console.
That plays nothing but games and does the best version of it. Well done, Nintendo. You even overtook my Xbox backtrack. 10 out of 10 for Mario. You deserve it. All right.
All right. So we don't have a question this week.
No. Reef's still angry at you for taking so long to answer his last one.
He must be on holidays or something. I don't know.
But anyway, guys, if you want to send us a question, please feel free. Send it to our Facebook, which is www.facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast. Or and put it anywhere. Just message us or put it as a comment. We see everything. Or send it to our Instagram, which is just Game Train Podcast, or email us at gametrain@hotmail.com. Is that right?
No, it's gametrainpodcast@hotmail.com.
Man, I got most of it.
Yeah, well done. And also we're on Twitter at gametraintalk. And also Twitter's got 240 characters now, so it's going to be so much easier for me to promote episodes on Twitter now. I'm really excited.
And so much easier for you lovely listeners to ask questions, which is what he meant to say.
All right, so we're coming up to that part of the show now, which is our hype and lame train this week. So let's kick it off with the lame train.
My lame train is really quick and short, and that is that the Assassin's Creed Origins map spoils the game. In-game.
The end game?
No, in-game.
Oh, right.
Well, it might spoil the end game. I haven't seen that yet, but it spoils... I've seen like these awesome costumes that are just beyond my imagination that I would have never predicted. And I've seen them, and I know they're coming. I've seen like these amazing spectacles underground and in tombs underneath exact spots, like right under one of the pyramids and some under other places that I won't go into description, but I've seen what they look like and like all these different mounts. I've seen amazing weapons and I haven't even done them. And I haven't even...
Wait, how have you seen all this?
So when you go in the map, you know, there's all those little icons for the photos.
No.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Anyway, the feature is really cool. It's just what it can potentially do. That's my lame train. So the feature is you open up the map, right, on Assassin's Creed. We're just finding out so much about this game today. I can't wait to jump on. You'll be checking this out. I'll be checking out the dreads.
I think I'm going to go play some Assassin's Creed after this.
Me too. Okay, so you open the map and there's like all these little... white squares or rectangles all over, scattered all over the map. And those are actually photos in photo mode that other players around the world have taken in those spots, kind of like Google Maps, you know, people take photos.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And it's really cool. So you can put your reticle over it or your mouse or whatever you want to call it, and it shows their picture. And then you can press X to like it or, you know, or unlike it. Or you can press down on the D-pad to make that particular picture disappear from your map and allow space for other people's pictures to appear.
Oh, cool.
And then if you press up on the D-pad, it deletes all of theirs from the map and replaces it with all of your own photos. So you can have a look at all the photos you've taken and where you were when you took them.
Cool.
And other people can like yours and so on. I don't know what happens if a bunch of people like your photo. There's also a photo of the day. Anyway, the feature's really cool. But because I love photo mode, I love looking at other people's photos. And I've like clicked someone and went, oh, well, there's a fucking cool outfit I've never seen. Ooh, there's a tunnel I've never seen. Whoa, what is that mount? Oh, wow, look at that sword. Yep. You know, so I've had so much stuff spoiled. Which is weird, because normally that happens on the internet, not within the game itself.
Hmm, okay.
And that's my lame train.
All right, well, mine this week is my TV.
Yep, mine is also your TV.
Yep, cool. It's too small and not 4K, so I'm sad.
Yep.
That's all I'm going to say about that. I'd like a bigger TV and a 4K TV, but I just can't do it at the moment. So, it's my TV, yeah.
Yep.
I feel like I'm missing out now. On things because of my TV.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
All right. Hype train.
Hype train.
My hype train is loosely connected to your lame train, and that is I feel like I'm missing out, but the Xbox One X is out right now, and that's my hype train because I will be getting one in 2 weeks' time.
Wow. Yep. Cool.
So I'm super excited because my lame train sort of... My ongoing one is that I've had a friggin' 55-inch 4K TV for ages now with nothing that can do 4K connected to it.
Yep.
So if, you know, we lived in the same house, we could both be happy. That sounds romantic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But anyway, so my hype train is the Xbox One X. I'm very excited to get it, especially because like a lot of the games I already have... you know, are like enhanced for Xbox One X. Like, I can't wait to jump into Forza Horizon 3 and Shadow of War and Assassin's Creed Origins, of course, which people are saying is like a very, very good game to play on the Xbox One X. And, you know.
I can't wait for your follow up of your lame train where you're going to download 40 gigabytes of textures on your terrible internet.
Well, I'm hoping I'm going to be quite busy on tour in the next 2 weeks. So I'm just going to press download and leave poor Jack at home with all that. I wish I could have brought it to
you. Did you know Gears of War 4 is 100 and something gigabytes on an Xbox One X?
You know that's how big Halo 5 is? Just on a normal Xbox?
That's ridiculous.
No, this is on the normal Xbox One. I went,
wow.
I went to manage it the other day, and it was without telling you because they've been downloading updates for it, because I've got my Xbox set on automatic updates. So you wouldn't know unless you put Xbox, unless you put Halo 5 in. But I haven't. So I went to go look at it and, you know, just delete it because I'm just kind of done with Halo 5. And I went to look at it and I was like, 103 gigs. What the hell? Pretty sure it was like 40, maybe even 60 at the most when I first put it in here. What's your hype train?
My hype train is Need for Speed Payback.
Is it?
It was until I started reading the reviews, which I shouldn't do. We should not do that. We should not do that to ourselves.
No, we should not.
It's so much better to go into a review without reading some or looking at other people's scores, because then it gives you that idea of, oh, it could be around this mark.
Yeah, exactly. And see, you did that to me.
Yeah, I did that to you, and I'm very sorry. But I'm still keeping it as my hype train, because that's a Need for Speed game. I like doing up the cars and all that in there, so there is a bit of that going on. So I'm interested to, you know, get my car and do it up how I want. Maybe one with the Game Train colors and all that on it. You know, just...
Oh my God, that reminds me. Can we put our Game Train logo up yet on Gran Turismo Sport?
I think so.
That's got to be soon, right?
Yeah, that's right. Because it was, it was like 2 weeks after it came out or something?
Yeah. Interesting hype train you have there, Captain.
All right, thank you all so much for joining us for another episode of the Game Train Podcast.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week, which will be actually, funnily enough, reviewing Need for Speed Payback.
Oh, look at that.
I know. How excited are you? I can't wait to hear your review on this one.
Who knows? I just throw around big numbers.
You know, write into us, send us some questions and all that sort of jazz. We'll answer them on the show. Of course, we'll be back with Backtrack, Hype Train, Lame Train, all the latest news in the video game world, and all those sorts of great things.
And we will be jumping right back into our SNES Classic Mini reviews.
Oh, yeah, we've been so slack, but we've had massive games to be playing at the moment, so
yeah,
those sorts of things sort of got pushed to the side slightly, so they'll be coming back into the fore as well.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, well, on to the closing fact this week.
Of course, you know, I nearly forgot about it.
I know. All right, so I'm calling this one Call of Duty by the Numbers. This is just a bunch of stats on the Call of Duty series. This article is written a while ago, so it's probably been updated since then, but from this article, here we go. You ready?
Yep, hit me.
So this is across the whole Call of Duty series. 18 billion multiplayer matches have been played. Call of Duty has been played for 25 billion hours. Ooh. Gamers play almost 2,000 years of Call of Duty a day. Players have respawned 1.9 quadrillion times.
That's just you.
And 100 million people have played Call of Duty.
Wow.
Yes. That is a bunch of Call of Duty button numbers. But again, thank you so much. I'm Callan Davison.
I'm Kyle Smith.
And this has been Game Train.